Welcome to Tom Papa's Come to Papa.
Welcome to another edition of Come to Papa, your favorite podcast among all the other podcasts. And I would beg to not differ. That's a bad start. I would also add, your favorite thing among all forms of entertainment. I mean, there's a lot of big stuff out there. There's the Game of Thrones, you went through that. You've got the big Tarantino movie coming up. You had the Lion King with its fancy lions and such. But really, what's more enjoyable when you're driving in your car, clipping your toenails, doing the dishes?
This is more. When you see a superhero movie and it costs $400 million, you're like, where's the money?
$400 million. A list of people working on it is just endless.
And then when you find out that this costs $500,000, you're like, how do they do it for so cheap?
How can they possibly crank this thing out?
They should get twice as much.
You know what this costs? $0. It actually does cost us money because we're so lame with our subscribers. Those people are keeping us afloat, and we don't service them enough. But today, they're going to get the live Come to Papa uploaded to the Patreon subscribers.
All right.
So good for you. Good on you. And the rest of the people will get that next week. And everybody else, we do what we can. We do what we can. We provide you with good entertainment. We thank you for joining us, and we have a big show. We're very excited because this is the first time in a while that we are both in the same room.
Right.
Paul has been rescued in a life raft from the ocean where we thought he may be living for the rest of his days, but he is actually on land. When you showed up today, it was a couple minutes late, and I was like, I can't believe it. He really was lying to us. He's really at sea. And he's not going to be here.
I forgot about L.A. rush hour. It's been so long.
Yeah.
I forgot at 3 o'clock you can't weave through this town like you can with a boat.
Right, exactly. This isn't like kayaking anymore, Paul. You're on land. Well, it's good to see you, buddy.
You too, man.
Glad you're alive. Glad you're here. For everybody else who came out to the shows in Napa and Sonoma last weekend, we thank you very much, and that's kind of it for the tour for about 4 weeks. We will be podcasting our butts off. We have one live show on Tuesday. I'm going to the Montreal Comedy Festival next Tuesday, July 29th, my mother's birthday. We will be doing live Come to Papa at the Village Underground. There's still tickets available for that. You can go to tompapa.com and get your tickets, or go to Comedy Cellar and get your tickets for that. The great Alonzo Bowden will be on the show.
Oh, wow, okay.
I know, it's a really great cool one. You guys know him from Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. And
his
lots
motorcycles.
His motorcycle crafting, and he's a hilarious comedian. And we're going to put him to work. He was really eager to do the show, and we feel blessed that we have him. Also, Dave Hill will be on the show. Paul will be there. I will be there. It's going to be great summertime, and we will be helping you break the heat wave. I can tell everybody the theme of the show will definitely be heat wave.
Yeah, we're taking the break because of my birthday and your wife's birthday and my mother's birthday. That's the big...
All on August 10th.
Yes.
So the whole month, we're not allowed to tour.
That's what it is now, Tom. Birthday month. Get used to it.
Oh, my God. You know, I live with four other people, and everybody has a birthday month that takes up half the year.
And here's the other hilarious thing. I met someone from Sweden, Switzerland, one of those countries.
Same thing.
Who knows? Dave Hill's alter ego band, Witch Taint.
Ooh, really?
Yes.
A fan?
Like a big fan, and knows all about it.
Dave Hill's Witch Taint. I don't know if we've talked about it on the podcast. Dave Hill, who's on our live shows all the time and a good friend of the show, he is an amazing guitar player and an amazing, not only fan of heavy metal, but, and he would attack me just for even saying heavy metal. I'm sure it's not the right term. It might be death metal. It may be speed metal. I don't know. But let's just say heavy metal. And he formed a band several years ago called Witch Taint.
Well,
go on Instagram and look at it. That's the best way to get the whole story. Just see what's on there. I have heard their new album. And I have to say, it is pretty damn good.
That's hilarious. Well, the thing is, like, it's basically if you were in a let's say you're a real musician, you're a fan of metal, you're like, we could make up a metal name and put makeup on and get fans just based on that.
It literally...
And then we'll go to Europe and then everyone will pretend that they know who we are and then we'll get to do a festival. And they played like a place that was like hundreds of thousands of people
they,
there.
They play in front of big crowds.
And he's got his crazy makeup on,
they're
whatever.
They're probably better than a lot of those bands. And musically, you know, they're really, really good. And unless you really listen to the words, you wouldn't know that it's they're having some fun with the whole genre. I really want to do a documentary on Witch Taint because the history of the band is so interesting. The guys are interesting. And it's almost like they're kind of like a band who is reluctantly being drawn out into the spotlight.
Right.
They just want to play. They come out of Cleveland, and they just want to do their own thing. And the fans, the groundswell is becoming so voracious that they have no choice but to get on planes and leave their families and go do these gigs.
And yeah, and that's the reason is that they don't want to. That's what we're doing wrong, Tom. We've got to not want to do shows.
You have no idea. You want to hear something, another brilliant stroke? This is our good friend Conan O'Brien has a popular podcast now. And that bastard puts an Instagram post out with him and Julia Louis-Dreyfus. And he says, what a great guest to wrap up my first season of my podcast.
What?
That's how smart that guy is. He doesn't do endless podcasts from now to the end of time every week without fail. He has seasons like a TV show so he can actually take a break.
Yeah.
Why didn't we think of that?
I don't know. I thought he was doing it because he just wanted more things to do.
Well, I'm sure he has more things to do, but it makes it seem special.
Yeah.
We just whore ourselves out there.
It's all marketing.
Every week. We just out there just giving it away for free. All this genius comedy and good relatable positivity. And he just gives it to you in little doses.
Yeah.
Then he'll go away
That's
for a bit.
That's pretty smart.
And it'll make you want more.
See, we usually take a break in the summer. We just don't like announce it. We do a couple green episodes, but this time we tried to like plow through it, but I think we only missed like 1 week.
And Charlotte filled in as the guest host.
Right.
Our breaks are just doing them remotely.
Well, used to be like in the summer it was Safari Tom or whatever whatever you guys decided to do for the summer.
Yeah.
There's usually like a month of family stuff.
Right.
And that was like a good break for you. Or at least sometimes it was better when you came back because you had all these stories from the jungle or wherever you guys went. Italy.
Yeah. I don't want to travel anymore.
Right.
Anywhere at any time. I love going for my comedy, one wheelie bag, zip, zap, zoop. Fine. I'll go and do my projects. I'll go out in America and report back for Live From Here. I'll do all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I don't need to be loading up my family and going to destinations that somehow have seeped through the culture and told us that we have to go. Everybody I know is going to Spain now. Spain and Japan. It's not a mistake.
Yeah.
The marketing is seeped through.
Italy
I don't know.
Is huge. Everyone I know has gone to Italy this summer.
Always. You know what? It's because I'm going to start ripping my kids out of school and taking them on vacations in October.
Yeah, that's
when all the boobs are out of there and you can kind of chill out with the locals and really enjoy yourself. But apparently they don't want to leave school because they have to get good grades and get to college so I can pay for that. The whole thing's just a scam.
Yeah.
And you try and stay out of it. You have the ability to stay out of it. You can zig when everybody zags. Once you make people and they get to around 6-7 years old, you're zigging like the rest of them.
That's what Russell Crowe always said. The man who travels alone travels furthest.
That's deep. I'm a big pot-smoking actor. That's really deep. I have had recently, there was the Tony Awards that had the guy from Hadestown won it. And an older African-American actor, he just moves real slow. Just an amazing presence. I didn't see the show, but just watching him was like, all right, I want to be friends with that dude. That dude knows what's going on. And he came up and gave a quote, and I think someone else gave the same quote this summer. For some reason, they both hit me. I'm looking just on Instagram right now, see if I can't pull it up really quickly. It might have been...
Not James Earl Jones.
No, not that.
Not like the narrator guys you're
talking
about?
Not Hemingway. It's Hemingway's birthday today.
Yeah, he's 120 if he was still alive.
Oh,
right?
He would be so gross. If he was here right now, he would be so gross.
He's another guy, too, that looked like he was 90, and I think he died when he was 62 or something.
Yeah, he looked really old. Okay, this one's similar. Bill Murray has had a quote that's similar. You want me to read it?
Sure.
First of all, the guy from Hadestown, the actor.
Mm-hmm.
Hadestown is a cool, folksy kind of musical. I met the musician, I forget her name, on Live From Here. And they won the Tony Award. And he won for his category of acting in a musical. And he said... that he learned like three lessons, and one of the lessons was the quickest way to get anywhere is by going slow.
Yeah.
I love that.
That's good.
You're not going to be the jerk on the freeway going 100 miles an hour and everyone's in traffic and speeding up on people and frantically going. You just cruise like the turtle, and you're going to get there just as quickly. And it's just not even just in the getting to the airport sense, just in life.
Mm-hmm.
Kick back a little bit. Downshift just a hair. Don't drive yourself nuts.
Yeah.
And just kind of go. Bill Murray's quote is, the more relaxed you are, the better you are at everything. The better you are with your loved ones, the better you are with your enemies, the better you are at your job, the better you are with yourself. Relaxed.
Relaxed.
Slow
okay.
and relaxed. That's a good, two good pieces of advice, especially during the summer months when you want to move slow anyway and you might feel guilty about it.
Yeah, I'll give you basketball one. The great John Wooden,
mm-hmm.
coach of UCLA, his saying was always, be quick, but don't hurry.
Ah, I like that. That's a great one. I'm adding that. That's three. Three for the summer. Be quick, but don't hurry. Here's a question for you. Who do you think are Bill Murray's enemies?
Oh, I know a lot of them.
You do?
Yeah. I read a book, and then I also heard a great interview, and he hated a lot of people. He's still the old-fashioned, like, anybody who wore a suit.
Yeah.
Like, as in agents or producers or industry people.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody other than artists.
Is an enemy.
Like at SNL or when they're rehearsing something, get out of here.
Really?
That's why they filmed Caddyshack in Florida. They didn't want anybody from Hollywood stopping in, checking mm-hmm. out the shoot. He's always hated. Like that, still, he has a 1-800 number that like really important people know.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't have an agent or anything. I think mm-hmm. he's got a lawyer, and they call that number and make their pitch, and he may call them and... 6 months or a year or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, that Lost in Translation movie, that lady was calling him for like a year and a half, and he finally called her back. And
Sophia
yeah.
Coppola?
Yeah, Sophia. And the famous one of the Garfield movies were done by Joel Cohn. He thought it was the Cohn brothers. So he shows up. He finds out it's not them. And so he laughs about it now, but he completely rewrote the Garfield script, which if you've actually seen the movie, it's kind of good just because it's him and he put a few things in. That's but
so funny.
Yeah.
So his enemies are anybody in a suit? A
lot of industry people, yes.
Right.
And
anyone else?
I'm trying to think. A lot of people mess with him early on. I think it was, you know, because Lorne Michaels even, like, they didn't hire him. Like, he auditions for Saturday Night Live, and then they didn't hire him.
At first?
And then he joined the Howard Cosell Saturday Night Live. He was on that first.
Oh.
That was head-to-head with, really, Saturday Night.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I saw, did you see Al Franken on Kevin Nealon's Hiking with Kevin?
Oh, I gotta see it.
It's a great, Kevin's amazing, and he has a YouTube show called Hiking with Kevin. I recommend it. Short doses. Mm-hmm. He's hiking and interviewing. And he is walking with Al Franken, and Al Franken said that someone at NBC, I think at NBC, maybe like the head of, an executive asked him, like, what would be your idea of the perfect show? And he wrote up a treatment that talked about having a host and having a band, and you do some sketches, and then you do the news, and you know, give the weekly news, and have a band come, a guest band come on and play, and have a cast that does funny sketches every week. And then he got a call if he would like to write for Saturday Night Live.
Oh, that's funny.
like a short time after. And Kevin's like, so they took your idea? He's like, yeah. Pretty interesting.
Yeah, he was there right at the beginning with Tom Davis. That was his comedy partner.
Yeah, yeah.
And well, the one that I was just thinking of, Bill Murray, was this, because he is notoriously difficult. Like, he's not
he's cranky.
Yeah, so, like, Groundhog Day, he was going through, like, a divorce, and I guess that's the last time he ever worked with Harold Ramis, even though they're friends.
Mm-hmm.
And same with Aykroyd. He's like, I love Bill Murray, we're family, but I'm not sure that we'll ever work together.
Oh, you mean because the other guys didn't want to work with him?
Well, I think it's just difficult to nail him down, and he doesn't, you know, he's very, you know, too relaxed, maybe. Like,
yeah.
He doesn't. You know, for business people, you know what I mean? If you're going to schedule a movie around them, you're like, maybe this isn't the best thing to do.
I don't like the quote anymore.
Why?
Because it's, I don't know, you can't be too relaxed. You also have to have some empathy for people.
Well, but that's what I like about him is I think he enjoys the moments.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you can imagine.
Yeah, but you know what? Sorry to cut you off, but I don't... you know, he has this is all talking out of school because I don't know the man.
Yeah.
All I know is what we all know, little bits and pieces and rumor and whatever. But he has a rep for being this in-the-moment kind of a guy, this
right.
Zen-like character. But he does at the same time seem to harbor and carry a good amount of crankiness, let's say, or anger,
mm-hmm.
which is... kind of the opposite of why you live in the moment. You can be strong, but it seems to me from the stories that perhaps he is a little cranky and aggressive with people who may not deserve it.
Well, here's what, and he is a complicated man.
Mm-hmm.
Here's what I do like about him is that for whatever reason, you know, because he and Chevy Chase both were kind of like these comedy heroes from the 80s, and yep. I still love a lot of what both of them did.
Sure.
But for whatever reason, Chevy must have been whether it be drugs or whatever, more difficult or meaner to people, and everyone seems to love Bill Murray, and he's still working. So there's got to be something to that, I feel like.
Yes. Yes. I know a story from a comedian, a big comedian, who in the early days was on Letterman at the same time as him, and he backstage, Bill Murray kind of gave him a lot of attitude.
Oh, really?
Unwarranted attitude.
Like, yeah.
Kind of like, I'm on the cool show, and this stand-up thing is whatever.
Yeah.
So, you know, here's a bigger, you know, look, I adore him. I love watching him. I'm a huge fan. But just talking about when you get behind these little bits that you're piecing together about a person. Look, I started off saying I love his quote, but
yeah.
I do disagree with the I'm going to be just a crank.
Right. I'm sure.
But, you know, maybe it's naive. Maybe half the world is, you know, crummy enough that you should rail against it and shouldn't give everybody a pass. I don't know. It's hard to say.
Well,
I'm using him more as a I'm using him more as a philosophical jumping off point. You know,
yeah.
I don't want to attribute all these behaviors to him because I don't know any of this is true.
Right.
But let's take it off of him and just talk about it for a second in regards to just living your life.
Mm-hmm.
Should you be kind of an ass to people who you think are an ass?
Yes.
Or should you just kung fu it away with least resistance?
Yeah.
And deflect it and not combat it.
See, you're very good at dealing with everybody. Whenever I see the type of guy that I know that I'm not going to like, that's trying to like bully some into something or pressure somebody into doing something, then I turn into a bully.
Right.
Turn into, hey, beat it, pal. Like, you know what I mean? When somebody gets too aggressive.
Yeah, I know. And there is that is an interesting question because I don't know if necessarily that way is wrong. You know, whenever I look at people who are really successful, there's a large number of them, not all of them, but there's a large number of very successful people that you know who are television stars, you know, just from our world, television stars, hosts of things, whatever. And you always come down to, like, they end up getting a reputation of being a real hard ass or, like, being tough to work with. And, you know, I always kind of question, am I too nice in certain instances?
Yeah.
Maybe you have to be that way. Maybe being that way puts your feet solidly on the ground and lets people know exactly what you want and they don't mess with you. And if you kind of deflect it and act too nice when you see those people you don't like, maybe they see you as just someone who is content with or without their help or with or without coming in direct contact with you.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Does that make sense?
Well, as the great Rihanna says,
ooh,
don't mistake my kindness for weakness.
Yes. That's true.
I feel like that's what puts a lot, like when you walk around and you're a nice guy all the time, that's when everyone hits you up for favors or asks you to do something or whatever.
Right.
And most of the time you're happy to do that because maybe that person really needs something. But then also there's the guy who's always asking for favors or always.
Yep.
And that reputation gets around quickly.
Yep.
You know?
Yeah, exactly.
So I don't know how to handle it. I just know that, like, at least in Bill Murray's case, I think his dad died when he was like in high school.
Mm-hmm.
So he had to like kind of get to work, and he got really depressed because he wasn't good at anything.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, that was great John Prine. That was his record that like pulled Bill Murray out of his depression. One of those songs just made him really laugh.
Right.
And that's what he started doing improv, and then he saw all his friends, his brother, everybody on Saturday Night Live, and they got famous and they all turned into jerks.
Right.
So he's like, oh, okay, that's what happens when you're famous. Everyone just turns into and asked for two years. And so I think he kind of already had up in his mind, like, I'm going to be famous, not in a cocky way, but here's how I'm going to handle it.
Right.
Right. And so your buddy Jerry Seinfeld handles it. You know, that whole thing with everybody wanting a hug and everything like that. And most people would be afraid of looking like a jerk or too cold. But it's like, I don't know you. I'm not going to hug you. I'll shake your hand. But
yeah,
I don't know who you are.
No, it's true. I think, look, you have to have strength, and you would be naive to just, you can't. I like the Rihanna quote maybe better than all our other quotes.
Yeah.
Because I really do believe that I believe without a doubt that there's a lot of not just bad people, but dangerous people, you know, people that, you know, that could physically actually hurt you or economically or whatever. There's definitely a lot of dirt out there.
Let's say.
Totally. There's being kind does not mean that you're naive to that fact. But I do feel also that it's kind of like learning a martial art, you know, like Bruce Lee, people that are expert fighters, they don't go starting fights. Mm. They have a tactic of avoiding fights and that least resistance kind of way to go through.
Yeah, you're never told to use it.
You don't go through all that training unless you know that you're going to have to, you may have to use that at one point, that the world is a dangerous place and that you will be tested at times. But you also don't run through life just going to every bar and looking for the guys that you don't like.
Right.
So I do think that there's a little balance. Look, whatever the concoction is for Bill Murray, it's what makes him interesting to watch.
Yeah. And
you know what I mean?
Yeah. And also remember, he did all those... you know, very early on, he did that, what was that, Razor's Edge?
Mm-hmm.
He did that Somerset Maugham movie, which is kind of like a spiritual movie.
Yeah.
While he was doing Meatballs.
Right.
And then he did the Hunter S. Thompson movie, which was a bomb.
Yeah.
But he ended up hanging out with Hunter S. Thompson and learning, it seems like everybody who hangs out with him for any amount of time kind of gets that... You only live once kind of quality, and who cares what people think?
It's so contagious.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can definitely see, if you read people that have that attitude, that's a very, very contagious attitude.
Yeah.
It's like when I read Jim Harrison, it's just like, eat and drink and live for today and, you know,
right.
make love every chance you get.
You know what else is interesting, too? It's always when people tell the stories about him, that it's not him saying I did this or I did that. It's always somebody else. That's what I like too.
Yeah.
It's like Larry Bird, you know, everyone, you know, they post stuff about people trash talking and stuff like that. Larry Bird would whisper stuff to guys and years later they talk about it now because it's funny.
Right.
They would be like, there's 1 second left. He's like, I'm going to get the ball right here. I'm going to shoot it right in your face. And he's like, and he did the exact thing he told me. I couldn't believe it. It's not Larry Bird telling that story.
Right.
So he didn't do it. You know, for that fact.
For that reason.
Yeah, there's two other Bill Murray things. I guess when he was at Hunter S. Thompson's place, they had an argument over who was the best escape artist, even though neither of them ever, sure this is a drinking thing. So Hunter S. Thompson tied Bill Murray up in a deck chair and threw him in the pool. And I guess Bill Murray, like, almost died until he finally, like... Hunter went in the pool and pulled him out. But, like, that's how far they went with the argument. and the other one, which I want to name my production, this production company, this.
Uh-huh.
When Chevy Chase came back to SNL to host, and everyone kind of hated him for leaving.
Yeah.
And then I guess John Belushi was telling Bill Murray that, like, Chevy Chase was saying bad stuff about him or whatever. So they got in, like, a fist fight. And right in the middle of the fist fight, they're arguing back and forth, and Bill Murray, like, Chevy Chase is like, said something about his complexion, Bill Murray's complexion.
Uh-huh.
And Bill Murray yells, medium talent. Like, while he's getting punched, he calls him medium talent. That's like the story everyone else said.
Yeah. Well... Yeah, I think a complicated dude for sure, but for our own lives, a little less of the drama.
Yeah.
I also know very successful people that don't live in that world. that right. You know, that don't, but they're not weak people by any means. You've got to be strong or you're not going to survive.
But famous people, just, we probably know a handful of like the ultimate famous people in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And just to see what they have to deal with just walking around, you have to have some kind of like mantra or something to keep yourself level and not.
You have to have rules for yourself. You have to have like a little rule book that you follow.
Yeah.
That gets you through life. And it's not just for those people that have to deal with that. You know, in some regards, somebody who has even like the opposite spectrum, who has very, very little and is really struggling in their job and hardly making it, and nobody knows who they are and they're totally anonymous, they better have a rule book for themselves too, because that life is much more difficult to navigate.
Yeah.
You know, you're rich and you got in famous and you got to deal with all this stuff, and it is real and it's a mental and emotional thing that has to be managed. But you do have money to get you out of jams.
Right.
And you can kind of create, you can bend reality or bend parts of your culture to keep you afloat. When you are in the opposite end, you know, you don't have a lot of wiggle room. There's really very, very few options for you. But in all regards, so it's kind of the spectrum. Everybody should have a pretty strict rule book for yourself to get through life. And we all do it, and we change the rules all the time, right?
Yeah. I mean,
like when you're on your boat and you kind of are all dialed in, and you're like, I've got my writing and I've got my reading and then I've got my working out and then I go do my show, and I got, you were kind of, you did it like subconsciously because you knew you were at sea and you would go crazy if you didn't set up a little system for yourself.
Right.
We all need that. And the more you can stick to it, the more successful you'll be just as a person.
Yeah.
I'm not saying like you even being successful at your work.
I mean, being famous is a good problem to have. When you do something, let's say that those idiots will stand outside your show and have all the pictures that they're gonna sell on eBay, will you sign those?
Mm-hmm.
You will?
Will I? Yeah, because I'm at a point in my career where I'm happy to sign anything.
Well, that's true. But I would
if somebody thinks that my Super Beasto picture would actually be worth something on the internet, have at it, kid.
Right.
You know. But I've seen them, you know, they all line up. What the funny thing is when you watch them, when those people approach and they BS you.
Right.
And they think you're dumb enough not, they think they're conning you. That's like an insult to me.
Well, they say something nice.
I don't mind being ripped off by people.
Yeah.
If you acknowledge that I know that I'm being ripped off.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like,
well, they won't let you sign to their name because that's what...
I'm a huge fan. I just... Oh,
hey, what's your name?
Fan.
Oh, yeah, just sign your name on there.
I'm a huge fan. I just... Oh, if you could just sign this. Oh, man, I watch everything you do. Now you're treating me like a moron.
Yeah.
How about, I'm going to resell this on eBay.
It
thank
smells
you so
like
much.
eBay.
Then it's like, okay, you don't... Don't take me for a chump.
Yeah.
You know, that part's annoying. But, you know, you watch like Jerry when we would leave shows, and there were people like that that would be at every stop along the way. They'd be at the hotel, then they'd be at the stage door, and then they'd beat us to the airport, you know, for the private jet entrance.
Wow.
And they'd be waiting at that fence. It was like they were just aggressive, and they... They acted like you didn't know that you just saw this guy at all those other stops. And, you know, all that stuff gets kind of weird. But anyway, I think, like I said, at any stage, we all kind of have to do it. We all kind of have to dial it in and create a little playbook for yourself. And then, you know, it could be your own book. It doesn't mean that you have to work out like, you know, some crazy person, or that may not be part of your rule book, but whatever it is that you kind of do, you got to kind of dial it in.
Yeah.
And kind of give yourself a little, be your own parent. You really do. Or you just kind of like spin out.
Well, it's like the most people, what pushes their buttons are like when you got a call about a credit card or some kind of bill,
mm-hmm.
or like a used car, like buying a car when they try to like screw you over and they have to like, they push you to the point of
when you're about to blow.
I just told you I can only pay this amount. Like,
yeah,
they want to make you like get upset or else they think they can like take advantage of you.
Well, yeah. I mean, look, even if you have the best guidebook in the world, the little rule book for yourself, and you think you have it dialed in, stuff happens and pops up.
Yeah.
And I think that we all, you know, we all are going to lose it at freaky moments where you don't even know that you've been carrying some anger, and all of a sudden the DirecTV guy says something to you about a charge that, and boom, you just explode. But again, if you have your little book, you'll get back on track a lot faster than someone who doesn't.
Yeah. Well, that's why mine has always been like in you know, the insult than the anger. You know what I mean? Like I never felt good about getting upset about something, but if I can really like jab somebody,
yeah,
with like a good insult.
Oh, there's
like,
nothing better. Nothing better than that. When someone acts rude and you really get to, they don't know your skills. of playing nightclubs and stuff your whole life and having people say horrible things to you. It's like, you know that you have so much in the chamber. You have so much weaponry that you could launch on somebody.
Yeah.
And if they just give you the chance, oof. One guy yelled at my wife in New York and he was wearing yoga pants. And just after I dropped a couple F-bombs to get him out of there, just as a verbal punch in the face.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. I never told you that story.
No.
I was, we were having some little, like, I don't think it was a party. It was like a little breakfast thing in a restaurant in New York.
It was in a restaurant?
Leaving the restaurant with a bunch of kids. It was like my daughter's friends, you know, and they were all very little at the time. You know, like a bunch of, you know, say 7-year-old kids, mm-hmm. you know, I don't know, 4 or 5 of them. And we're, you know, whenever you're moving that little army of 7, you know, 5 7-year-olds or whatever it was, let's say 6 7-year-olds, plus a stroller for the little one, plus paying, plus getting out of the restaurant,
yeah,
and getting your hats and coats on and doing the whole thing. It's a circus. So we're leaving, and my wife goes out ahead, and I'm paying the bill, dealing with that part of it, because you divide and conquer. And so my wife goes out the door, and she's, you know, you've got a little gaggle of ducklings going across the
yeah,
and she's putting someone on a bus, or putting someone in the, or getting on a bus, or putting one of the people, like the other parents, on a bus, or she's doing something. She's now in travel mode. I'm paying. She's herding them across, and you know, you're moving tiny children. And you're doing the best that you can. Some guy is walking down the street. One of these guys, like neighborhood prickly guys.
Yeah.
Who any kind of, he's like a cop for his own, for social etiquette. You know, like the guy on a bicycle who yells at you because you're
not supposed to park there.
Yes, that guy. Busybody. This is on like Broadway in like 14th Street, like it's busy area.
Yeah.
So to be the, try and be the cop of that neighborhood, you're going to lose every time. So anyway, I'm paying. I'm putting my coat on, about to go out, eyeball Cynthia and the kids and everybody else, and I see a guy in her face.
Oh wow!
He's like nose to nose, like letting her have it. So I completely, you know, go into Spidey mode.
Yeah.
Boom, out the door, right up to him. Don't ask any questions. I don't have to ask questions. You're in her face.
Yeah.
I don't know. There's with a bunch of children. Mm-hmm. There's nothing to discuss.
Right.
I don't need to know whose side is wrong right now. I don't care what she did.
I'm angry right now.
Yeah. Right, exactly. So he's in her face and saying something, and I just come up, and I can't be physical with him, but the power of a good F-bomb is powerful when you need it.
Yeah.
And I just, who the F, what the F do you think you're, like right in his face, loud. What the F do you think you're doing? Who the F are you? Who the F do you think you are? I'm telling you, it was like I gave him a right hook, jabbed him with the left, and punched him again with the right. He was back on his heels,
right,
scared, reeling, like he was literally had been physically punched in the face.
Right.
And he stumbles back, and I go, you get the F out of here. You're a mother with children? And he went to say something. I'm like, don't even F and try it. Like, I completely Ubered out. And he just turned and started walking away, like all frantic. He knew he had he knew he was going to get his ass kicked if he did anything. And he turns to leave. And of course, the thing that my kids remember about the interaction more than anything is when he starts walking away, I yell something like, "And what man wears yoga pants?" Something yoga pants. Like it was like, yeah, said something about the color of the yoga pants. They were like striped or something. What man wears like Gumball's colored yoga pants? And all the little kids start laughing at him. And it was that thing. It was like you had to still at the end be a comedian. Right.
End it on a high note.
End on a high note and end with that. And it's like she turned back to the kids. Well, what the hell was that?
Well, and there's still even the life survival part of that is, if you get that guy's face and then he like matches your energy, you yeah. have to recognize like, okay, this guy's nuts. Let's get everybody out of here. You know
yeah.
what I mean?
Well, yeah.
Some guys are just wired differently and they're looking for stuff like that.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, you see a guy like that at the bar that's always starting problems. It's like, all right, let's get out of here.
I'll be honest. My bravado was definitely enhanced by the fact that I knew, without a shadow of a doubt,
right,
that this twerp could have destroyed him physically.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? This wasn't like, I would have been, I'm sure if he was 6'4", muscle head, I would have been like, hey, mister, is right. there a problem here? Cynthia, will you please get these kids out of his way? You know what I mean? Like, he said something about that it was because she was blocking the sidewalk with the children. That was his problem.
Oh, jeez.
But I knew this guy, it would have taken one punch and he would have fallen.
Right.
He was like a little older and scrawny.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But man, I was ready to go.
The best one I had, it was like a physical one, but it was after a show. It was like a bunch. There's like a whole family, and it was like a really fun show. But there's like this kind of drunk, miserable guy that was still hanging out with his whole family, and all the women were asking for. They were like older women. They were asking for pictures and. Uh-huh. I think they're from Scotland or England or something.
Yeah.
I think they're from England. And they're like, oh, that was so much fun, blah, blah, blah. And then the miserable guy's in the back, and he's just like, you want to know what I think?
No.
Like, I don't really, but it's one of those things like, hey, yeah. I just want to say hello and leave.
Uh-huh.
And he's like, I wanted my face to hurt. And then... And then I looked at him and I looked at everybody else, but I made sure he knew. And I said, well, we can still make that happen if you step outside.
Oh, nice.
And it was like funny and kind of reminded him I'm not the.
Yeah.
I don't work for him. You know?
That's a great line. Oh, I love that line. That's amazing.
And you couldn't set that up. That was just like,
yeah.
You had to work with what he said.
Oh, that's perfect. No, so look, we're all flawed, right? I've had these moments like, you know, we start off talking about the philosophy of how to live and your rule book, and but then, you know, we all break it, and that's why you gotta, but I do think that's why you have it, so you can kind of come back to it. But anytime, and this is just the karma of the universe, anytime I give someone advice about being cool and collected, whatever, I always end up snapping.
Yeah.
Shortly thereafter. Really. It happens.
This is preventative?
I don't know what it is. I just know that anytime I'm like, get on my high horse and tell somebody, let me tell you how you deal with life so it doesn't stress you out. Let me just give you a couple pointers. Then like, flash, go forward 20 minutes and I'm like, throwing an apple at some guy's car or something. You know? It happens way too often.
I bet you this happens like every day that somebody is screaming furiously, I just got out of yoga.
Yeah.
It's like that point where you're like, okay, I can handle everything.
I know. Look, it's a big stressful place. And when I'm giving the advice, I'm probably just talking to myself. I'm just telling myself, reminding myself of how I should be and what I should do.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it's ugly out there. Talk about ugly. I was very excited last Thursday, I think I told you this, to go see the Quentin Tarantino movie.
Oh.
I bought tickets for the Arclight for Thursday.
Right.
And I was like, I'm going to get... The Arclight is a theater chain out here, and I was very excited to be one of the first people to see that movie.
Right.
And then realized it was for the following Thursday.
Right, yeah.
Which is this Thursday now, and I am going to be in Montreal. So my family has 4 tickets for 4:00.
That's cool.
And I can't see it.
Well,
I'll get to see it. It's a movie. But I was very excited. Very rarely do I care about even going to see something the night it comes out. But to be with the crowd and...
Yeah.
You know, they got a 6-minute standing ovation at the Cannes Film Festival.
Oh, really?
You know, those are always skeptical. I'm always skeptical about that because they're always suspect because I don't believe anybody gets a standing ovation for 6 minutes. But it's kind of one of the indicators of the story that they're telling.
So then what happens now? Brad Pitt takes your seat with your family at the Arclight? Is that what's going to...
Probably. If you ever heard the joke I tell about him and his wife, then probably.
Right.
And it's well deserved. But I am excited to see that one.
Yeah, me too.
I'm really excited about it. I haven't seen anything really. I saw my daughter went to see The Lion King. She said it was meh. $180 million opening, $500 million worldwide.
Oh, man.
God, it's incredible, isn't it? Those numbers.
Do you think they make up how hard it is to draw those?
Yes, because I don't think they're drawing them at all.
They just put it in like a computer program.
Yeah.
And then 5 people are in a sound booth for like a week.
Right.
And that's it. And they try to say that it costs as much as a superhero movie. Yeah, they say it's like really expensive.
When I worked on the Bee movie, I can tell you, it's one of those things when you don't understand something, so you question it.
Yeah.
Like the Bee movie took like 4 years to make.
Oh, right, right.
And you're just like, so you make one change. Well, let's have the bee come down the stairs instead of fly over there. All right. And then 6 months later, you see it. It's like, why that take so long? Come on.
Oh, man.
Just draw some more bees and let's go. So I don't really understand exactly what goes into all of this, but I do know it does take a lot of time.
And
a huge company just to pull it off. But I mean, I just saw the animation of those lions and I was pretty blown away.
Yeah, that's supposedly like, you know, like South Park, everything's so rudimentary.
Mm-hmm.
But apparently they were using like the top-notch thing. Like they could have done, you know, they eventually made a movie and had all this other stuff in it.
Right.
With like explosions and everything, but they just used like the bare minimum. But it still took like... I think, I don't know how many days it took for them to do it, because they were doing stuff like right down to the wire. So I don't know.
Right.
They must be paying those guys. Like,
I got a call about...
There you go.
Oh, look, scooters
are
gang
in the neighborhood.
Oh, no. It's all changing. Bella's angry, you hear? She wants to come in and bark at them.
They've made it. The scooters have made it.
That's great. They're going to take over Manhattan soon, I hear.
Yeah, I was wondering.
Yeah,
if they were going to
fighting it, but they're now apparently they're coming in.
I think it's too corporate. I bet you they get thrown out as soon as they drop them off, because that's all they do is just drop them off.
Yeah,
and then if the town doesn't like them, they just pick them up and dump them at the edge of town.
All right, that's Bella. She's complaining at the door, which means we should wrap things up. This was good.
Yeah, good to see you, man.
And we'll be back. We'll do New York next week.
Right.
Or maybe we'll use Robert Kelly's... on Monday. We could use Robert Kelly's studio and do another one, and then we'll do a live one that night.
So when is the show? Is it Monday or Tuesday?
Monday.
Oh, it's Monday night. Okay.
Yeah, it's Monday. Don't blow it.
I won't blow it.
Don't.
They moved you around. What about married Colin Quinn? Is he going to do the show?
No.
What's
oh, you know, actually,
is
I
still
to,
on Broadway.
Here's a little inside info. I have to go to back to City Hall. Apparently, there was something wrong with the form.
Uh oh.
He doesn't know it, but he may not be married right now. I think if he were to leave right now, he would get off scot-free.
This is his chance.
Yeah. I don't know. Something got screwed up, I think, with my name.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because there's just, you know, my license says
Papadopoulos.
Something, and yeah, and the other things, yeah, it uses my middle name, Gerard, and the other one doesn't, or it just says G, or I don't know, or signed in the wrong spot. Something's wrong.
Yeah.
I got to go in on Monday morning and rectify it. I feel so bad. That's never happened.
That's weird.
In all of my ministering.
So would they not tell you, or just after they tried to, like, process it?
No, they sent something, and the New York City sent me a letter.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so I have to fix that.
Yikes.
Poor Colin. Like I said, we're
have him keep that tough crowd money.
All right, everybody. Thank you all for listening. I hope you stay cool out there. You know, this is heat wave stuff, you know. I don't want to sound corny, but don't sweat it.
Yeah.
Enjoy your life.